Sheffield Live, made in Sheffield, made by you.
Every Sunday morning at 9, join me, Pete Evans, for Spinning Jazz on Sheffield Live, 93.2 FM. Each week we'll be exploring the wonderful world of modern jazz. From hard bop to bossa nova, from Latin to soul. That's Spinning Jazz, Sunday mornings at 9 on Sheffield Live.
If you like rock in all its forms, you will love Glory Days. You can listen to us locally on 93.2 FM and on the telly, and anywhere in the world on sheffieldlive.org. What do you think, Dawn? You know what, I think he likes it. That's Glory Days, every Monday 1 till 3, here on Sheffield Live. Bosh, bosh. Oops, I've had an accident.
It's time to open the music box. Join me, Steve Roden, every Thursday morning between 10 and 12 for music from the 40s to the 90s from my own music collection. Songs I've grown up with, ones I am sure you will enjoy hearing again. Hope to see you then.
If you love new music and you want to discover the best new artists out there, then tune into The Backroom with me, Paddy. I'll be playing the best of new indie, electro, EDM and punk and showcasing new Sheffield talent. Also music news, local and national gig guide and new album releases. So tune into The Backroom every Thursday night between 6 and 7pm here on Sheffield Live, 93.2 FM.
This is Sheffield Live.
Good afternoon and welcome to the film show with me, Martin.
And me, Denise.
Good afternoon.
Hello.
And are both our mics working this week?
Maybe mine shouldn't be. Let's turn me down.
Not
this
off
week.
Me to say, is it? First of all, we apologise. We had a couple of technical hitches last week, but thank you very much to the thousands of listeners who called into the station to say
that. I can only hear the woman. Where's the man? Why does she keep talking?
Yeah. And hundreds of other things. Like, but genuinely, thank you for the person who contacted the station. And I think what we're going to do is, to make sure you have a clear show, we're just going to come round your house and do the show in a few weeks' time with our record collections. And you'll see radio broadcasting at its... It's been a both of us are knackered, aren't we?
We're a pair of Mardy ones today.
Yeah.
I think
so. Well, you're
all kinds of tiredness going on.
Yeah,
with Martin and Denise. This
I know,
week.
Tired and emotional, as they say in private eye. Just as a quick heads up, because we don't think we've got much this week, so I'm filling in a bit. I went to see the Bike Riders last week, and I agree with Denise. It was half a decent film, but it had a huge black hole where the character of Austin Butler should have been.
He's so gorgeous. Yeah. And like,
I can't,
hang on.
Go on, Lydia. Oh, should I just say, we did discuss.
We're going to
do the whole show doing Jodie Comer's accent. So we're going to do the first bit of this show, right? What do you got?
Guacamole.
Yeah.
I read something about that where people were saying it's a really rubbish accent, it's really bad. And then someone produced the tapes of the real person that she's sort of based on, and it was just exactly like it. Do not come after Jodie Comer for her accent, because she knows accents.
Not you, but people in general.
Just do not. She's on it.
She went out with a guy for 6 weeks. And then she married him. What's she gonna do?
It's still funny though.
Yeah, and I'm just gonna Rumpelstiltskin. I don't know where that came from, but you know, hey, it fills up a few minutes.
But you know what? I've got more entertainment out of the bike riders than I thought. Just yeah.
Certainly, I've got more out of the bike riders than some of the films I've seen this week.
Oh dear!
But
we're not coming to you with joyful reviews this week, and I apologise in advance.
We'll get to that at some point. We do have two bell moments. Oh, this is a good bell.
Oh, good.
Bad bell we used last week. Our first loss is the veteran American actor Bill Cobbs. Now, I must say, this guy wasn't too familiar for me, but I think he's been a mainstay on American television.
Yeah, and I think he's one of those guys as well that you go, oh, that was his name. He was in that face.
He's been in loads of big movies, never as a really featured part, but... Probably like the American Sam Kidd, you know, just turns up everywhere. He's in everything. And he died at the ripe age of 90 last week. I can't really say much else about it because I don't know much about it.
I read he was in the Hudsucker Proxy, Bodyguard.
I heard he was in the Bodyguard, so yes.
I think he always...
He's up there, isn't he? Yeah. It's him again. but the other... a much more well-known actor for those of us of a certain age,
yes,
and attracted to a certain genre. If you went to see an American crime movie in the 1970s that was set in New York, the great Tony Lo-Bianco, New York, the great Tony Lo-Bianco was likely to be in it. Bianco became, or was it Lo-Bianco, I should say, not... It sounds like I'm talking about Matt Bianco. Then I'm not talking about. So Lo Bianco came to fame in The French Connection, where he played Saul Bulka.
He was the one being chased.
He was the hood. He was the hood being free with his money in the nightclub where the Three Degrees are singing.
Right.
When Gene Hackman and Roy Scheider go in.
He did a special line in Heads and Hoodies,
and he's the one that raises suspicion with Hackman and Scheider. And they spend the night following him around, spending money like it's going out of fashion, and then going to open his sandwich shop at 6 o'clock in the morning. And from there, the story unfolds.
He has a good look as well, a good face for that. Like, when they used to cast actors that didn't look perfect.
Yeah.
Like, he looked good, but he didn't look like a perfect, chiselled...
You know me, that's why I'm very disturbed by all these actors... Who look like
the thing? You know, the faces fold back.
What's his name? Glenn. What's his name?
Oh,
his
new, you didn't like Glenn, did you?
Glenn Powell.
You've even forgotten his name.
Yeah, I can't remember his face. What was his name? He was in The Hitman. And he's going to be in this film about wind.
Twisters. Do you mean Glenn Powell?
Glenn Poole? And I think if he was, you know, he could be a bus driver in Sheffield and I wouldn't recognise him. You know, no. Getting back to Tony, though. he was in a number of these crime films in the 70s and had a long career turning up in TV. But a special mention must go out to a film he was in the 1970s called God Told Me To. which I would say is one of the most extraordinary films of the 1970s, made by the great Larry Cohen. And so many directors, oh, you know, I'm a maverick, I work outside the system. Well, Cohen did. And he made films quite often under his own money, and he would just go out on the street and shoot a movie with a couple of actors. God Told Me To starts out as like a serial killer hunter, where there are all these murders taking place across New York by people, but all by different people. And when they're arrested, they all get arrested. And when they're questioned about it, they say, God told me to.
Right.
And Tony Lobianco is the cop investigating all of this. And it gets weird after this.
This is another one that needs to go on my pile, I think,
Martin. It is. I don't want to say too much where it goes, yeah. Because if I was to say it to you, you'd say, oh, don't be ridiculous. But this is...
Listener, can I tell you, Martin's eyes are lighting up.
I know.
Well.
They certainly weren't yesterday. Or on Thursday, but we'll get to that later. So if you can track down a copy of God Told Me To, give it some time, and you'll see a film which you just don't know where it's coming from next.
But he was still working until quite recently. Oh,
yeah.
He was in, his final picture was Somewhere in Queens in 2022.
Is that Somewhere in Queens?
Somewhere in Queens, directed by Ray Romano.
Yeah, he was a wise guy.
it's one of those, yeah. Oh.
You're sitting there realising that you should know who Tony Lobianco
absolutely,
is.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah. So.
But you're here to educate
Naughty
me.
Corner.
Well, I'm going to check out that film if I can find it, but it sounds like one of those films that you struggle to get.
I can make you, well, of course I'll make you a copy because I'll get arrested by the copyright police.
You can
police.
Make me watch it.
I could, yeah.
Thank you.
Or I'll make you a copy and you can put it on your pile at home. Yeah. if I put a lot of sellotape around it.
We had a conversation earlier where Martin told me that he'd bought a new Blu-ray and watched it. And I was like, oh, you watch the Blu-rays that you buy. Oh, I just sort of pile mine up.
I watch some of the Blu-rays that I buy, you know. But if I take off the cellophane, I'm halfway there, you see.
Yeah.
It's the ones you've got that you haven't taken out of the cellophane.
Don't,
and I think,
don't keep the price
tag. And you think, why did you buy that? Why? Trailer Trash.
Yes.
Coming out in 2 weeks' time. Film I only found mention of last week. I don't know if any of you have heard of this already, but Long Legs.
Horror.
Ooh.
Horror mystery.
There is a great trailer out there for it. And the trailer looks scary.
How scary does Nicolas Cage look in it on a scale of 1 to 10?
I'm not sure if you see him in it.
Full Cage.
You can hear him. Oh. I'm sure it's his voice in it. Oh. But I'm not sure if you see him. But then that's the good thing. You don't quite know. It's one of those where you're not quite sure what you have seen in the trailer because it's cut very, very quick, but very, very effectively. I jumped during the trailer.
Did you?
I did. Oh. Well, I never. So I'm looking forward to that in 2 weeks' time. And I think with time we can do some music, can't we?
Yeah. Music have I picked? Right, so this week we had a look at the Sight and Sound, this month's Sight and Sound, and they're doing a quintessential 21st century cinema special, which a little bit is.
I think they had a slow month, didn't they, on Sight and Sound? Oh, let's do another list.
Interesting. They'll highlight a film and then put a bit with it that. So they've got critics to pick their favourite, their best films.
What they
say are quintessentially 21st century. So they're not necessarily like the best films of the year. So there's lots in there that, well, there's a whole list of stuff. And I like to think I've watched a lot of films, but there's a lot I haven't watched on that
list.
Oh, God,
yeah.
and then they supplement it with like, they started doing their top 10 films in about 2005 when they succumbed to doing lists like other publications. And I've picked some music that I like from there with original composers. But as part of the magazine, they highlight some of these films. So, for example, Old Boy, that we're going to hear from first. There's something from the year it came out, a nice interview. But it is like what they've already... If you're a subscriber, it's all there on the
archive.
This
is the original, not the remake.
Yes.
Because that's a stinker.
Oh, yeah. 2003. Oh, boy.
Spike Lee had a bit of a lapse there.
Hawk Chanwook. Now, we're going to play first... well, something that we didn't realise until we looked into the album, but all of the tracks on the album are titles of... sort of general film noir type films.
A lot of them are film noirs, yeah. Because first of all, I thought, oh, it's all film noir. Yeah. But like older films, and lots of them are films from the 40s and 50s, yeah. Aren't they? Yeah.
And this one
is then.
Start with Farewell, My Lovely.
You're going to be here. Right?
Doing that bloody humming.
Was that not you?
No.
Oh.
There's someone else in here.
I should have mentioned at the beginning of playing that, by the way, that
the hum
is
out.
a bit of singy-songy at the end. So that was Farewell, My Lovely, one of the tracks from the original soundtrack from Park Chan-wook's Old Boy.
Old Boy.
Old Boy. Now, that was a ripping start to the 21st century. And that was like a real launch of... because South Korean film's big in South Korea and other countries, but this went mad mainstream, didn't it?
I mean, we're looking back now, it's probably about 25 years, isn't it, where the world discovered... the cinema of South Korea.
The world discovered what's been going on quite nicely in South Korea for a while, thank you very much.
But yeah. I think there was also a big boom in South Korean filmmaking as well, and there was probably four or five directors and movies that all of a sudden started getting released in this case. We'll certainly getting more coverage at film festivals.
Yeah.
And from there,
I think this was got the jury prize, didn't it, at Cannes, and it was the year that Quentin Tarantino was your favourite, but yeah. It did, I think, didn't Tilda Swinton make a cutting comment of, like, to him, like, that all that stuff will be in Quentin's films later.
And so it was.
Giving him many ideas.
Yes. But yeah, and Park Chan-wook has been certainly one of the biggest successes internationally from South Korean cinema, but by no means the only.
Yeah, and such a what's the word? It's such a gritty film. The subject matter is quite distasteful, but the humour in it is so bleak, black, and just.
You'll see a man eat an octopus.
Oh yeah, and didn't the director say as well? Because was it a live octopus? Well, it's four. We actually use four.
Take four.
I feel sorry for the actor. I feel sorry for the octopus.
And you're saying it's got some material in it, which is sort of very, very difficult. And I don't know if you've watched the Spike Lee version.
I haven't watched it. I've read.
They pretty much cauterize the plot to avoid all of that problematic stuff that comes at the end of the film, you know? Which you think, what was the point?
But I don't think Spike Lee was particularly keen on that either. I think it wasn't the film he intended to do.
I think he just needed a gig, didn't he? He was going through a bit of a bad patch, wasn't he? I think he just needed a job.
Well, yeah, I should mention the composer there was Joe Young-wook. He has worked a lot with Park Chan-wook over the years and still working. Decision to Leave, I think, was maybe the last track they did together, film they did together. Yeah. That was a cracking soundtrack as well. Cracking film.
I mean, we've got some tracks. I will talk about other films as the Earth. I was just looking for when some of these films, because I was going to talk about a Brazilian film called Aquarius.
Ah, yes.
Is that 2016?
Yeah.
And you've given me the most difficult name to pronounce.
Say it quickly and with confidence.
Kleber Mendonça Filho.
That's right. Brazil.
Yes. Mm. Filho. He got a lot of attention about 3 or 4 years ago with his film Bacurau. Have you seen that?
Which was fantastic, yeah.
Again, that was a film which started off somewhere and ended up somewhere.
Kind of epic as well, wasn't it?
It was awesome, wasn't it? Aquarius is a completely different type of film. It's about a lady who's retired, played again by the magnificent Sonia Braga, who has this beautiful beachfront property. I think it's in Rio. Mm. And some developers want to buy up her home, as it's the last home stand until they can level everything and build, you know, a huge leisure complex. And she just loves living where she lives.
Thank you very much.
As you are. And it's a very, very subtle film in the way that these property developers start, trying to offer her a good deal, and then how things start to become a little more sinister without it ever like dipping into pure melodrama. Mm. And a lot of it is just about her character. Her strength, her resilience, the love that she has for her family. And it makes for an absolutely absorbing film, which, when it's finished, you think, well, nothing much really happened there. But, in fact, a lot did, and it's such an involving film. I think it's one of the best since 2000.
Well, it's funny, I don't know how it passed me by.
I think it had a very brief release.
Yeah. When it first came out. You have to be really on it with some of the
Because some of this stuff comes and goes, you know, and you don't even get a chance to read a decent review. And sometimes, you know, it's better seeing a review that's like from that's after the film's been out for a while. That it's a more considered thing. And a bit, yeah. You know, actually, I saw this film 6 months ago and I can't get it out of my head sort of thing, you know?
But do you know what? Back in the 80s and early 90s when I was first going to cinema a lot, it used to be that the films that were out in London that got reviewed and then you'd say, oh, I'd like to see that. And it was a long time before it came out on VHS to hire even.
Yeah.
That was a long time coming. So you'd end up going to see these international films in like a library theatre. I went to a lot of things that were where the films had been out 6 months ago, but our chance to watch it was when a library theatre put it on.
Yeah. Or we were lucky because we had the Anvil during the 1980s.
I lived in Bedfordshire. So.
Did you? Mm. Nothing in Bedfordshire?
Well, Leighton Buzzard had a library theatre and so did Luton Library. They were really good.
Mm.
They got really good stuff on.
Because the library theatre here in Sheffield used to run, I think it was like a monthly film screening week.
Mm.
That'd be like one screening a day. Then when the Anvil came, the Anvil's programme was incredible. They had three cinemas chucking out all the best international releases, revivals of old movies and stuff which hadn't been seen for God knows how long. And then eventually that closed and the showroom took over. But it was something about the Anvil. It felt like a... It had a sort of club feel, but you felt the people scheduling this really know what they're doing at a time when there were so few of those like independent art house cinemas in the country at all.
There was another one on the one of the critics picked out, Beatrice Loya, which I haven't seen, and again it's another one that passed me by. Anatomy of Hell, Catherine Breillat.
Oh, was that Catherine Breillat? Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that's the porn one, isn't it?
Yeah, but I'm just really interested in the porn one. And I just go, yeah.
But it is.
But it says it serves as a sombre epilogue for the previous century's most prominent films about female vulnerability, from Hitchcock blonde vehicles to 90s erotic thrillers. I'm fascinated by this. And I missed it at the time, 2004. I'm definitely going to try and check that out.
It was quite controversial. Mm. And I think a lot of it was because there was some very explicit sex scenes.
Yeah.
You know, it's around this time there's a number of films that come out where penetrative sex is actually depicted on screen. And up until then, that had always been a complete no-go to be shown or to even get certificated. So it was a time where all of a sudden the BBFC was starting to, you know, actually maybe we need to treat people like adults a bit.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to check that one out. Late, but 20 years late, but it's never too late with films.
It's never too late. Was there anything else there that you particularly...
It's the ones that... I mean, there's ones that obviously everyone's familiar
I mean, the
with.
Thing is, we are going to talk about the films attached to each of these pieces of music as well, aren't we? Yeah. So,
But the one, it's interesting, the ones they've picked out, because they've just given different critics one to highlight. Yeah. So they're not necessarily big films that you would have necessarily...
And some of them, as you say, I just haven't...
Although Bridesmaids is one of
them. Really and look, Christian Petzold.
And our favourite.
I mean,
Christian
you heard
Petzold,
it here first. But
Barbara.
Nina in Barbara.
Yeah. That was the Doctor in East Germany, wasn't it?
Yeah.
She's so good.
We're just meandering through a magazine here.
You
get this show back on the road.
Oh, have you seen that one?
Oh, that one looks good. Let me put that in my notebook.
Welcome to the film show where Denise and Martin will just talk you through a magazine. But to be fair, that's what Sight and Sound have done this month.
It's pretty much what they've sat and done, isn't it? But we are getting to the point of, you know, tune in to Martin and Denise watching movies and going, oh, that was a good bit, wasn't it? Oh, I enjoyed that.
Well, it is, but I do think...
Oh, it's him. It's him from that film we saw the other week.
They did that thing. I've really enjoyed this month, though, because it's just really nice dipping into these films and looking back and looking forwards at the same time.
That's pretty much what you do to my mind each week. Oh, you've seen that.
Shall we play another song?
Please say there is.
No, this will be a little bit of a favourite for you anyway, won't it?
Oh, it is. So I could talk about this one after.
Favourite director of mine, Claire Denis.
I like to first.
35 Shots. 35 Shots of Rum is one of the Sight and Sound films of the year.
Listening to the film show on Sheffield Live 93.2 FM and on digital, and I think both myself and Denise are waking up a little bit now.
Yeah.
And you were just listening to the Tindersticks with the track Closing from their score for Claire Denis' 35 Shots of Rum. And the Tindersticks have scored maybe 6-7, maybe even more.
Yeah, films. I think Claire Denis was a fan of their work and just asked them if she could use a song in an earlier film, and they said, "Why don't we write you a whole bunch of songs?"
Yeah, and
they did, and they've been making good music and film together ever since.
They did a tour about 10 years ago where they were showing the scenes from the films, and they played along live.
I love those kind of gigs.
That was great. And so they did. I did all the films that they'd scored. They did bits from that.
Hasn't Claire Denis got a story about you, Martin?
She does say that she was sitting in front of me. Tindersticks gig in Paris.
Does she go on about it?
I think she does. Yeah, and I've said to Claire.
I'd love Claire Denis to have that story about me.
Yeah, well, what can you say? I don't like mentioning it anymore because people saying that, no, enough already.
I was at this Tindersticks gig in Paris.
Did I ever tell you about the tell, time? What can I, well, how can I say? I was going to say, you know, I was at
that is a quality anecdote, Martin, and I'm very pleased for you, obviously.
I was at a pub in Crooks and Claire Denis was in there.
Oh, yeah, get out of Sheffield, Denise. Yeah. She'll happen to you too.
See a bit of the world. Anyway.
Seeing a bit of the world, shall we go on to reviews?
Oh.
We've not been looking forward to this because, well, Martin and I went to see A Quiet Place day one on Thursday, didn't we?
Yes. It was our first joint venture to the cinema, wasn't it?
Yes, and we picked a corker.
It was a corker.
Oh, it was not a corker.
You took a pint in with you, and yeah. I wished I'd taken a pint in with me by the time the film ended.
I tell you what, look, we didn't like it, all right, spoilers, but Martin hated it more than me, so let me start by saying what's good about it. There is some good stuff in it. So Michael Sarnowski is the director. He directed Pig. I just want my pig.
That's a great movie.
I love Pig.
A berserk.
I love pig. I'm a vegan, guys. I don't love pig.
A berserk Nicolas Cage has his prize pig stolen
by a
nefarious group of chefs.
It's really good.
Mayhem ensues. And pork chops.
Lupita Nyong'o is fabulous in this. She is a truly wonderful actor, and she makes a lot of this believable. Joseph Quinn turns up about half an hour in as a very... they're both very engaging and they're both very good. And I think they raise the level of the film. But
really?
Unfortunately, the film is meant to be... I'm not sure what's going on. It's meant to be suspenseful, but I didn't really feel the suspense. Let's do a brief start of where we are. So it's day one, Quiet Place. If you don't know the Quiet Place films... We're basically taken over by these mad creatures from another planet, powerful, but can't see. They react to sound, so you have to be very, very quiet.
Yes.
And New York is a very loud place.
What you gonna do?
Lupita plays a young woman in a hospice. She's dying of cancer. She has a pet cat and she's a bit fed up with...
Don't mention that cat.
I suppose as well, how you feel about this film might depend on how you feel about cats. Because me and Martin were both... We're not cat people. And we were both like, but why with the cat? Why? And like, so in a film that a sci-fi film that stretches like reasonable...
Credulity?
Yeah. Even in a film where these mad monsters are coming down from another planet and you believe it, you cannot understand the behaviour of this cat and the motivations of the people and for the cat.
Yeah.
But there's also quite a few plot holes in the narrative of...
I mean, it almost follows through the maxim that is given by Tony Curtis in The Sweet Smell of Success, which is cats in the bag, bags in the river. And that actually happens, but the cat comes back.
Oh, no, I mean, there's not really any peril in it. So she's wanting to go and get a pizza, like the world's ending, and she's determined to go and get this pizza. And obviously there's a bigger reason why she's going to go and get the pizza, right? You know, it's just a bit dull.
Could you care less by the end of it?
No, but what I didn't spot, because I couldn't really remember, I saw Quiet Place, which I really liked, and then the next Quiet Place... I was okay with, but I wasn't that fussed.
But Cillian Murphy was there.
Was there. I do remember that. But someone spotted that I hadn't realised. So Jimon Hounsou, the French actor who was in Amistad a few years ago.
Yes, yeah.
So he has like a small role in this film. He pops up a few times, let's just say.
Yeah.
And he was in A Quiet Place 2 as one of the islanders.
So like, because of that, you can
kind of
surmise
know a bit what's coming up.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But I can't rate it, I'm sorry. I love Lupita Nyong'o and Joseph Quinn's lovely in it, but I don't get the stuff with the cat. And
I mean,
just...
the only thing I can say positively about it is it's less than an hour and a half long.
You feel an hour and a half, don't you?
And the only thing that interested me about it was right from the very start, this film don't look right.
Oh, yeah, you spotted something.
It don't look right. And, I mean, lots of it is CGI, but it still didn't look right. It didn't look like New York. Mm. And there's one scene where, she's out... looking for books or something, and he's got a cat, or she's got a cat, and he's got a book. I didn't care by this stuff. And they're by this sort of little parade of shop fronts. And I thought, well, that looks like them shops in Canary Wharf. And then these shops have never had anything in them for like 30 years. And I'm sitting there thinking, and the more I'm looking at the film, and I'm looking at, I thought, well, this looks as though it's been filmed in Britain, and they've just, you know, CGI'd a load or something.
And yes, so we had to stay to the end to
you
watch.
You have to stay to the end for it to come up and tell us that it had been made in Canary Wharf.
Yeah, but you spotted it.
But sometimes, you know, you must get down on your knees and praise to God that you know me and have access to this sort of knowledge.
So, Quiet Place, we can't rate.
No, that's a double. Yeah. Negate the rate.
But I'm brokenhearted about this. I haven't seen Kinds of Kindness yet. I'm still going to go and see it on Sunday. I'm looking forward to it. It's 2 hours and 45 minutes. But over to you, Martin, for your review of Kinds of Kindness.
Well, you may well come back with a counter review next week. So.
Oh, listener, I hope so.
Anyway, I went into this with high hopes. High apple pie in the sky.
Don't make me sing.
I've enjoyed all of Lanthimos's films so far, and so I was expecting a lot from this. It had great reviews from Cannes. Jesse Plemons, who's increasingly thin Jesse in this film, won Best Actor, and it's three separate stories. With sort of like a joint cast, the same actors turn up in different roles in each of the stories. And very, very briefly, the first story is about Jesse being a office worker who is, one can only say, like, ruled by his boss, who tells him what to wear, when to have sex with his wife, what to eat for each meal, and he rebels, and that story goes on from there. The second film has Jesse as a thinner Jesse as a policeman whose wife has been lost on an expedition for marine biologists, and when she's found and brought back, he doesn't think it's her.
Right.
And confusion and a little bit of mayhem and some very, very explicit sex ensues.
Are we in like a real? Are we in like a slightly alternate universe, like some of his films?
It's all sort of shot It's all shot in New Orleans, but nothing seems normal. Let's say. And in the final one is this with this weird death cult, which. And I've got to say, my patience was wearing a bit thin with this final one. And that's the one where she does the little dance. Yeah. But if I've waited 3.5 hours or 3 hours for this. give me a break. Come on. What you gonna do? So I kept going for as long as I could, hoping against hope this was going to have the moment that changes my view and makes me reappraise everything that I've just sat and watched. I mean, no, it's brilliant. It was wonderful. But I come out of that cinema hating this film.
Oh, no.
And I know it sounds like I hate most films that I go to see, but when it's a film that I've put some faith and some belief in.
Yeah, we have invested a little bit of anticipation.
And I came out of it thinking, you know, I saw the trailer. That was all I needed to see. And I'm sure a lot of people will disagree with me. I'm sure that happens every week.
I hope I'll be disagreeing with you.
And I would love to... I'd love you to disagree and give me your view as to why you like... No, I mean genuinely, because I'm thinking...
A thousand words, Denise, next week.
Is there something... Is there something wrong with me with this film? You know, what am I not getting? So I was, but what did happen, I was sitting in the cinema, and a woman in front of me turned around, and it was Claire Denis, and she said, what? I said, what the hell was all that about? And I said, what you gonna do? You see, these shows are immaculate. It's just like a Chinese box puzzle.
I cannot believe Claire Denis.
We spent hours writing these scripts. So that's, I'm afraid, it's, that's a double slate.
Oh, dear.
And I'm sorry, you know, because I like everybody, the actors.
Yeah.
I've got nothing against the actors, nothing against the director at all.
I suppose it's a long
time. I'm disappointed. It's two and three quarter hours.
I'm not enjoying it. Do you know what I don't like about when there's a film that's cut into thirds like that as well? I think, what was that? Can't improvise because I can't remember the names of films. There was something a few years ago with Matt Damon and Jodie Comer, and you got the alternate version of medieval France.
Oh, that was with that Ridley Scott film, wasn't it?
Ridley Scott,
Adam,
yeah.
Driver, was it?
Yeah, and there was an awful rape scene in it, which was just we're still doing this in the 2020s? Goodness sake. But I just remember the starting the third bit of it and going... Or being in the second bit of it and going, oh, I've got to go through this all again for another vote. Oh, I can't be bothered. There's nothing worse, is there, when you're not enjoying
a film? And strangely, this
is
the third film that's been structured like this that we've seen this year. Because we had Monster, The Beast, and now Kinds of Kindness. And I found this a chore to get through, whereas I quite enjoyed the way the other two worked. So I'm sorry. I'm really sorry, Denise. I'm sorry.
That's all right, Martin. Let's hope that we're having an argument next week where I tell you how brilliant it is. I'm going to see it.
Well, that'll just get very shouty.
I will have to back it up with evidence. Shall we move on to another good song? So when
music.
I said to my better half that I'd put some music together based on films of the... 21st century. He said, right, you've got some Nicholas Britell in there, have you? He knew. So this is a track from one of my absolute favourite films, Moonlight. And this is The Middle of the World. Show on Sheffield Live with Denise and Martin, and that was part of Nicholas Britell's beautiful, wonderful soundtrack to Moonlight, one of the Sight and Sounds films of the year for 2016, and obviously Oscar winner as well.
Yeah,
in a very smooth, almost as smooth as our show.
And the winner is
not Moonlight. No, it is Moonlight.
It is Moonlight. Moonlight. Oh, it's Moonlight then. All right.
But
Warren Beatty looking like Joe Biden at this week's. What's happened?
But Nicholas Britell also well, massively well known now for Succession. That's yes. everywhere, isn't yeah. it? But he also did If Bill Street Could Talk, which was a soundtrack that I featured.
That was Barry Jenkins' film after Moonlight, yeah, wasn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. Just, I listen to that soundtrack so much, and it's got some songs on it as well that I really love. And I could have just done a playlist of songs from Barry Jenkins' films that I love as well. But
then you're always making these notes in your book about other playlists that I'm going to do. So you know that one's there.
Yeah.
I've got a few in my notebook. You may not like them as much as the ones you have in your notebook.
It's not for you, Denise.
But I've got one. I've got one that's going to have you running out of the studio. But not yet. I don't need to do it just yet.
Yeah.
But just be careful. All right.
I'm waiting for the Will.
Don't upset me.
William Shatner Christmas is coming.
We can always have Christmas early this year.
What's coming up then?
Well,
but we are excited. We've had a deflated week because a bit disappointed with some of the films we've
seen. I'm trying to hold myself back now for what is coming next week.
But there's good stuff on the horizon.
I'm hoping so because. I've really bet the house on next week's film.
Oh God, I hope you're not disappointed.
Oh, I know. If I do, God knows what it's going to be like. Next week, July the 5th, the third part of Ty West's trilogy, starring Mia Goth, which has so far consisted of X, Poyle, and ends with Maxine. Next week.
I'd seen Pearl. I hadn't seen X, but they're doing that little thing in HMV.
You're so lucky that
they're doing that thing in HMV where if you buy something and they've got some stuff that they want to shift on the front. Do you want to buy this for half price? And I always go no. And I saw that X and
I'm
Pearl
exactly the
are
same.
The two.
I often sneer at it, trying to sell me this.
I don't want that.
Oh,
thank
please.
You think you find I know what I want? Oh, yeah, yes. No, I want those two.
Yeah,
I
have them, yeah.
Right.
What do you mean you haven't got any more?
So I've got an exciting double bill to watch. Ready for watching Maxine next week?
Maxine X took place in the 1970s. Pearl was in the 1920s. And Maxine, that's with three X's
Maxine.
In the middle, triple X. Is taking place in the porn industry of the 1980s in Los Angeles.
Oh, my favourite.
You're going to love it.
I'm going to love it.
Should we be writing down all these notes?
Oh, God. Representation of women again.
How dare they? But anyway, there's some big stars in this one. So it's Elizabeth Debicki is in it. But if you've seen the trailer already, you've seen somebody, and I can't wait to see him, is Kevin Bacon.
Oh, no,
bad Kevin.
Bad Kevin is coming.
He looks so bad in this. So I think maybe we should stop it there.
Yeah.
Because I don't want to say any more.
Yeah.
Now, the other thing that is probably going to let us down and disappoint is apparently May May's coming in to review this because she loves Maxine. Do you? So, you know, no one believes a word she says.
May May, she's not here to defend
exactly.
herself.
That's how it should be. Oh, yeah, I want to do that. Oh, I'll do this. No, all right then.
Come and see us, May May. I'll hold it back.
Yeah. And when she's gone, you'll say, we're not having her on the show again. Just like you said last time. Anyway.
Oh, my goodness.
Over to you, Denise.
Well, you're excited. Well, a lot of my things I'm looking forward to are just re-releases or anniversary things. So Goodfellas 2 is screening at the Light tomorrow, and I haven't seen that for years. Goodfellas 2? No,
two?
There's two screenings. Goodfellas, two screenings. Goodfellas 2? Everybody, did you see Goodfellas 2? Just made it up.
Denise and Martin are in it, doing these really weird accents.
Like a
molly. Hey, stab him. Stab him.
So, yeah, Goodfellas. I'm going
to
catch that.
I always wanted to be
tomorrow.
A crook.
And Kinds of Kindness. So I'm putting myself through two very long films tomorrow. Yes. Let's hope it's not too sunny a day. Godzilla, the original 70th anniversary screening of Godzilla at the showroom.
Which is an amazing movie.
Mm-hmm. And they're doing the 50th anniversary. Oh, my God. 50th anniversary of The Conversation.
We never used to have all these.
We didn't, you know, but then...
Is it a mark of they're trying to find an excuse to put old films out because there aren't any good films being made anymore? And that, but it can't, because, I mean, we see lots of films that we love.
Yeah, I don't know, but then there's an appeal, isn't there, to go and see something in the cinema?
Is there a way of trying to rehabilitate these films to a younger audience? Because, oh, I don't want to see that, it's all full of old people. Just like the way, and I know I'm making sweeping generalisation here, you know, and we were talking about this earlier, you know, young people wearing Nirvana T-shirts and stuff like that, you know.
And saying, what's that old lady doing wearing a Nirvana T-shirt? I went to see Nirvana.
I bought it at the gig.
Time.
And you've got a Breeders' T-shirt on now, but you went to see them twice this week.
Yeah, that's why I'm a bit tired and mardy, maybe. But then you realise as you're getting old, because I went to see them twice because I thought they weren't here for, like, since 2017 was the last time. I may never see them again. I'm going twice this time.
Mm. What were we talking about?
They were touring the anniversary of their album. Yes, fair enough. So, but also, Motorcycle Diaries is a whole 20 years old. So is there anything that's 10 years old? Is there anything that's 5? What are we... But if it's an excuse to get people to come back and watch stuff,
but the thing is, you could get hold of these films whenever you want now. In most cases, you could get hold of a copy of most films quite easily, can't you? I mean, now there's streaming and there's Blu-ray, DVD, and there's loads of stuff on YouTube you can get your hands on.
It's not like being in the cinema, huh?
It's not.
Having someone chewing nachos in your left ear, is
it? I know. And keep turning around saying, I've cleared the knee. Yeah, I know.
But you were excited about a TV thing as well, though, weren't you?
Oh, The Bear is back. The TV show on Disney, probably the only thing worth watching on Disney, about a Chicago sandwich joint that they're going to turn into an upmarket restaurant, an eatery. That's back for its third season. First two seasons had absolutely glowing reviews. Third season's getting a bit of a backlash, but I'll take out a monthly subscription to Disney and watch it.
Is it going to get a Martin backlash, though? That's the only backlash worth having.
I have to say to you, the second season nearly got a backlash. Because you know who was in it.
Oh, I think I know. Is it lady?
O.C.
Olivia Colman. And I'm going,
how did she get in this?
It could be worse.
What are you going to do?
If Lily James is in it, I'm not interested. Okay.
Well, we're just about done.
Yeah, that's about done. That's about us. So, apart from to introduce our last track.
Is it long enough? Oh, it's long enough to see us
out. It's long. It's long and cheery. On a particularly not cheery film.
They've all been toe tappers this week. I'm going to go out humming that second one.
Probably see from my playlist why I'm a little bit mardy bum today.
Been a tough week for you, hasn't it?
Yes, it's been a tough week. But another one of my favourite filmmakers, Lynn Ramsey, worked with Johnny Greenwood. I think she first worked with him on the film before when you talk about Kevin.
Yes, I think he did some work on it.
Yeah, but you were never really here. So Joaquin Phoenix.
Is that in the Sight and Sound list?
It's one of the rather than the 25. Yeah. It's in it was our film of the year.
Because that is an extraordinary film. Yeah,
wonderful and tough watch. But this is Tree Strings, Johnny Greenwood. So we will see you next week. In the meantime, enjoy your films.